I grew up having to defend my mom, my sisters, and always having to have that fear of, oh no, it's going to happen again. Another kid. Today I thank God that my mom did not believe in birth control, because I am here alive and sober. I took my first drink of alcohol at the age of 6. The reason why I started drinking at that age was because it was a prescription. It was my medication. I was a very timid and skinny little girl, and it was prescribed by the doctor to drink a beer before I'd go to bed so that I could relax and sleep, and also so that I could gain some weight. I loved it. I loved what alcohol did for me. Alcohol did for me what I could not do for myself. Alcohol gave me the courage to pop up anywhere and tell you where to go. Even if you didn't want to know. By the time I started high school, I was already keeping my alcohol in my locker. It was my medication. Also, by that time, I also started on some little pills that kind of made me relax. And I found out very quickly that if I mixed them with the alcohol, it made me feel really good, you know. So, and I'm kind of going really fast, but, you know, hey, God, you're the one in control of this. Thank you. By the time I was getting ready to graduate, it was 2 days before, actually, my mom told me she wanted me to meet my father, that my grandmother wanted me to finally meet my father. By that time, I had rage. I was so angry. So the only thing that I knew to do was to get loaded, and I'm gonna show you. So I went. I wanted to get even with this man that I didn't even know. And I was introduced to my grandmother. She was a beautiful lady with white hair, blue eyes. And you know, this is not somebody who should have blue eyes. This is a Mexican, you know, brown skin. And I felt, now how the hell could this be? You know, I mean, this woman, blue eyes, gray hair, and a very white complexion. All my life, I had been the one who had to be set aside, not seen, and not heard, because of my skin and because that I was a bastard kid. So I had a lot of inferior complex about myself. And then, also, because I was a lesbian, you know, I didn't know what that word meant. But I knew that I liked being around little girls. The guys were fun to play with, but the little girls just did something for me. And so they took me to go meet my grandmother. And my grandmother took me to another room and said, I'd like for you to meet your father. And I was waiting for this now. So she takes me to the other room in the kitchen, and I was ready. This man walks in. I did not even see his face. All I saw was this big hand. Just extend his hand to me, and I went, like, you think I'm going to shake hands with you? You know, of course I didn't tell him that. All this was going in my head, you know. And he just turned around and walked away. And that is all I know of this man. He's a tall man with a big hand. So The plan was that he was going to send me to any school I wanted to. He was going to pay. And I said, yeah, you're going to pay. So I went to business college, and he started writing checks every week. By Wednesday, I was out of money. I'd say, I need more money. And I would get my mom to go shopping with me and buy her all the food she needed just so that he could pay. I kept doing that over and over again. And he would not even, you know, get pissed. I said, well, I'll show you. I won't take your money. You know? I won't take your money. So he quit. Quit sending it. So by that time, I was really angry. And I moved from Corpus Christi to San Antonio. And this is where I really blossomed, because there were people there that were like me. People that looked just like you. They were having fun, dancing and partying. Guys dancing with guys and women dancing with women. And I just knew it. I had finally found a place where I belonged. And you know, coming from such a little small town, I had no experience. I didn't know how to drive. I didn't know how to get around in the city. So I needed somebody. And it doesn't take long for a lesbian to attach that U-Haul. And immediately I found somebody mature. I didn't care. All I needed was some experience. And I learned. I learned pretty fast how to drive a car after I burned the transmission in one of them. And then I learned how to get around, and it was pretty good. And this partner that I had was an alcoholic. I mean, she really was an alcoholic. She drank so much, she passed out. I didn't. I kept on partying. Well, that relationship lasted for 9 years, and I continued, you know, having fun, going to bars and everything. My alcohol had not, I didn't think that it was a problem because I was just having fun. And I was working for this insurance company, and by this time, you know, my priority was to get loaded, to get high, to just have fun. And, you know something, I have to wait. Something just happened. This is really crazy, and I know. You know, my higher power speaks through me, and I never know when he's going to start doing this kind of shit. You know? And he's doing it. And he just wants me to tell you some shit that I don't want to tell you. But I guess I have to. You know, I didn't want to talk about too much about my childhood and too much about what my alcoholism really, really was about. Because when I do, I have to let you see the real me. And I don't like that. But my higher power, my God, is so powerful, so much powerful than I am. So, hey God, you're in control. The kind of abuse that I came from was not only verbal or physical. The emotional abuse that I experienced was pretty severe. For a long time, I treated women like they were just a piece of shit. They didn't matter. I wanted to use them, and that's exactly what I did. I'm not proud of it, but that's where I come from. You know, I come from the family of alcoholism. The only thing I knew was how to drink, how to get high, and how to hide my fears, not let you see me. If you wanted somebody to be someone else, that's who you had. I just, you know, like a chameleon. Who do you want me to be? I'll be. I got into things like prostitution. I got into pimping. I got into dealing. I got into stealing. I got into doing a lot of things that I'm not proud of. But you know what? If I had to do it all over again to get where I'm at today, I'd do it again. I would do it again. Because what my higher power has given me today is so much more than that pain that I experienced. The tears that I had today are joyful tears. My God loves me. My God has brought me out of the ditches, has brought me from places that I wouldn't even want you to go. My higher power is such a magnificent power. You know, last year, I spoke in San Antonio, Texas. My sponsee, her name is Hope, was dying of cancer. I taught her that service is the way to go. Service work. She chaired that meeting. 2 weeks later, she died. But you know, she lived life on life's terms, doing service work till the very end. What kind of a gift do you think that is? My higher power loves me so much. He brought me to you. The people that I didn't want to be around. No. When I was so tired of living the way I was living, the only way out I saw was to kill myself. That's the only way out. I had called my boss. I was late for work one morning, and this was April 20th, 1982. My boss said, "If you're late one more time, you're fired." I said, "Okay, I'll fix my car at lunchtime, during my lunch hour, and I won't be late anymore." Took my car into the garage, and they hoist the car up. We're working on it. And it was like 15 till 1. My car was still up there with pieces of, you know, parts there on the floor. "Are you going to finish?" "Well, no, it's going to take us a little longer." Well, so I called my boss and I told her. And she said, "I told you one more time and you're fired." I said, "Good. I guess the best thing for me to do is just get rid of myself." So I started home, walking home a few blocks. I knew exactly what I was going to do. See, by this time I was 35. I had just celebrated my 35th birthday, like 12 days or 11 days before that. And I had started partying, celebrating my birthday since April 9th, all the way through April 20th. So I went home, and I started taking these pills, and I started feeling like this was it. All of a sudden, I felt like my legs were going to give out. I felt like jello. Everything was just going to fall. You know, I was ready to die. So I had a couple of roommates, and I said, no, I'm going to lay in bed so that they won't find me, you know, just laying there. So I was, by this time, I was also crying and in a lot of pain, a lot of pain, pain that you can't even imagine. You know, even though I was partying and doing all this kind of stuff, the loneliness, the pain was so terrible. So I went ahead and I lay down, and I have this precious 19-year-old cat now. Her name is Scooter. And Scooter was a gift to me. And Scooter got on the bed with me, and I was crying, and my Scooter came up, and she started kissing me, and she started licking my tears. And for the very first time in my life, I felt loved. I felt incredible love that I can't even describe it to you. At that time, I just said, oh God, please help me, because I didn't want my cat to be alone. Oh my God. 3 days later, I woke up in a treatment center. I don't believe in coincidences anymore. I had made the phone call to my supplier, to my cocaine dealer who was a doctor. He wasn't in, but the receptionist answered the phone, and I told her what I had done. Now, I don't know this. People told me this later. She said, I called and I said that I had taken all this drugs. And she said, stay there, honey. I'll get you some help. And her best friend worked at Tejas Treatment Center. So she called her up and said, we need to get her in. They made all kinds of arrangements, so I'm told. And after the third day, that's when I woke up in the psychiatric ward behind locked doors at a treatment center. I wasn't an alcoholic. I wasn't a drug addict. And I told those doctors. There was this counselor, George B., big black man. I mean, he's a huge guy. Looks at you, you're going to, you know, kind of get a little scared and shrivel up. You know, he's big. And I was telling him, I don't belong here. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not crazy. He says, honey, he says, normal people don't go around trying to kill themselves. If you try to get out of here, because I was threatened to get out, he says, you get out of here, as soon as you walk out, the man in the white jackets, and we all know what that means, will get you. That was a state hospital, and I feared that. No. So I stayed. I stayed only because I figured it would be a nice way to, you know, gain a little weight, eat a little food, get my nourishment back, and go back and do the things that I was doing. Of course, I was angry, first of all, because I lived. I wanted to die. When I experienced that love, and I have to share this with you, and I hope I don't frighten you, because for a long time, I was frightened myself. And I, by no means was I going to tell anyone what had happened to me. As I lay there and I yelled out, oh God, please help me. I saw me looking down at me. And I took off in this tunnel, this white light, this beautiful, peaceful feeling. That was just so incredible. And I thought I was crazy because I had seen that, because I had felt that. For a long time, I wanted that feeling. I would go to the Bible, I would go to anything to try to get this feeling again. I have that feeling today. When I see the smile of this beautiful man, when I see my little sponsee just telling me it's going to be okay, let's get on our knees and pray. You know, that's when I experience those feelings. I'm really scattered, ain't I? I'm not. God is. So, I had a choice. The choice was stay. I stayed at that treatment center, and I had to participate. Not very willingly, but I participated. And they were having a mini retreat. And people would come from, people that had been in treatment before came back to share their experience, strength, and hope with us. And this gentleman, he should have been gay. I mean, he was just, he should have. And he shared with me, he said, the shortest prayer I ever prayed was answered. All prayers are answered. His shortest prayer was, oh God, please help me. And that's when I felt that feeling again just take over. It just took over my whole body. I said, okay. I still wasn't an alcoholic, by no means. Stuck around for 2 years and I still wasn't an alcoholic. But I knew that God had saved me, that something had happened. So I continued going to the meetings and you know, they say, bring the body, the mind will follow. Well, I was tricked. I was tricked. You know, they knew. They were waiting for me at those poker tables. They had a poker game every night that we had a meeting. After the meeting, the poker table was there. And I loved to play poker. And I kept coming back. They kept telling me, come on back. Every Tuesday and Thursday, I would be there playing poker after the meeting. You know, you just can't sit around a bunch of alcoholics and not pick up something. You know? So I did. I guess I did. And by the time I knew it, I was a year sober. And I had this plan. Okay, this is enough. I'm going back out. My real friends who were out there waiting for me had a party for me. And no coincidences. One of my worst enemies out in the streets was at this meeting. We had been going to the same meeting for a year. She was 2 years sober. She was going to the smokers' meeting, and I was going to the non-smokers' meeting. We come out of the meeting, and here we are. It's like, what the hell are you doing? Same thing you're doing. And I said, well, you know, bye. This is it. I'm going. She said, you're celebrating a year today? And I said, yeah, but I'm not. They're having a party for me. She said, well, I think what we need to do is kidnap you. you know, my radar just kidnapped me because when I was drinking and drugging, kidnapping meant S-E-X. You know? They tricked me again. They tricked me again, and they took me horseback riding till my ass was raw. You know? And they took me to this meeting where there were people that I had met when my sponsor had taken me to at a Lambda meeting. And those people looked different. The first time I saw them, you know, they were kind of old and raggedy, and they just didn't want to have to be associated with them people. You know, I was different. I wanted the attention of those straight women, not those old fogies at Lambda meeting. But this time, they took me to this meeting. Lou Ann, she's no longer with us either. She saved my life. She took me to this meeting, and for the first time, I really felt that I belonged. I could admit, yes, I'm an alcoholic, but I still could not accept it. Alcohol had done for me what I could not do for myself. And now, here I am, a year sober. All nerves are just raw. Feeling everything, and something woke up. Something so powerful that I needed a woman. I needed to have that mate. I guess you all have never experienced that. All of a sudden, just the soap in the wrong place. You know? And my God provided for me. I met this beautiful woman. And it was love. I thought. We got together. This relationship lasted for about a year and a half, almost a year, year and a half, something like that. But in the meanwhile, we broke up 14 times. That was the best lesson I learned. She taught me so much. She taught me what kind of relationships not to have. I was going to get married to her. And we had all this holy union stuff. The church was there. Her twin sister was going to bring us the cake. The whole works. My sponsor calls me up early in the morning and says, I need to talk to you. You know, when your sponsor calls and says, I need to talk to you, you know it's serious. So I went over there, and he said, honey, she's gone. This was the 14th time. She's gone. I felt like a fool. I felt like I could not even show my face around AA this time. I had done it too many times. No more. The pain I experienced was like death. Like when somebody dies and it hurts so bad. And I laid there after everyone left. I had quit my job. I had given up my apartment. I had had a garage sale and sold everything except for my clothes and my dishes. The only thing there at the apartment was a mattress. And I laid there. And I laid there just curled up in so much pain. And this sponsor, Dahlia, called her Dolly, she fired me. She fired me because I would not leave this relationship. You know, she kept telling me, that's insanity. That's insanity. You're trying the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Well, this sponsor came back that morning, knocked on my window, and as I was there, curled up, she said, open the door. And I got up and I opened the door, and she said, you're coming with me. Now, sponsors really, really mean so much to me. Sponsors have taught me how to live. She took me to her home and nurtured me. She practically spoon-fed me. She made me go to meetings, two meetings a day. And then she had the audacity to tell me, now, honey, let's look at the really, really big problem. I said, well, shit, she left me. She's with the other bitch. And she picks up this mirror and she says, here, look. Look at the real problem. The only thing I saw was me. And I was like, and she says, now, here's this telephone number, here's this address. This is where you're going. The big book tells us to go to any length. It gives us permission to go wherever we need, wherever we can get the help. And I needed therapy, extensive therapy. And I started going to therapy. And I started having to do things like learning how to love myself. How the hell do you do that? You know? Well, I was taught. I started dating Hilda. I started showering Hilda with gifts. I started pampering her. I even gave her a vibrator, girls. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Oops. Anyway, I started learning how to love myself so much that I started having this higher power come into my life. And but I still was in a lot of pain because of this woman. And because I still had not accepted my alcoholism, I still was very sick. And on this day, I was alone. And the pain that I experienced, that loneliness, you know, like everybody else, I'd see a couple and I'd say, man, you got it made. I'm single. I don't have anybody to hold me. I don't have anybody to just be there. And that pain was so powerful that I had to double up and hold my stomach, fall on my knees, and just totally surrender. And I told my God, okay, you know, take all of me just as I am, because I was a piece of, you know, I won't say the word again. Anyway, and I told this higher power, if you're there, if you can take this pain away from me, I'll do anything. Just take this pain away from me. I guess I was a slow learner. I didn't remember that God does answer all prayers. And He did. The next morning I woke up and there was no pain. I felt good. All of a sudden I'm doing service work. All of a sudden people are calling me, you know, and I told you I'm Mexican. And all of a sudden these people estaban hablando español, querían hablar conmigo. Do you understand? Los 12 pasos. Like, what am I doing? But it was happening. God was working in my life. God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. Now, I have to advise you. Watch what you pray for. Watch what you pray for. Well, I made this deal with God. And he pulled his end of the bargain. Then one time, phone rang. Somebody called and said, Hilda, we heard you were going to the international convention in Montreal. I said, yeah, I'm going. He says, well, you know, could we submit your name to be a speaker? I don't care, you know, because I still had that feeling of no, being nobody, worthless. How could anybody want me to go and speak to you? I'm the bastard kid. About a month later, phone rang again. I said, Hilda, are you sitting down? I said, no. Well, sit down. So I sat. And I said, you have been selected as one of the speakers for the 50th International AA Convention in Montreal. Do you realize what that means to me? My higher power was doing for me again what I could not do for myself. I was not grateful at that very time. But getting there in front of all the beautiful faces, being able to share with you what God has done for me was incredible. The love that I received from you was just tremendous. I learned in this program by example, don't tell me, show me. Show me you're doing it and then I'll do it also. And I had very good sponsors and they showed me how to work the steps, how to be of service, how to be honest, and how to love. I was 6 years sober, and my, wow, God, I was keeping up much. Anyway, I was 6 years sober, and all of a sudden this feeling that I was worthless again overcame me, and I said, okay, God, I'm just going to have to quit my job. And after I quit my job, I'm going to go into treatment. Because I have a lot of time. Of course, you know, by that time, my higher power also had given me a gift that I really treasure. And that's my partner, Cheryl. You know, she does for me a lot of things. The thing she does is she hears what I do not say, what I do not speak. And she heard the pain that I was in. She made the phone call, 6 years sober, and I had to go back into treatment. No, I didn't pick up a drink. But I was really, really insane. What was killing me was my pride, my ego. And I had to totally surrender again. My higher power put all those people there. This time I had to really humble myself and have God. I had to go back to my AA group. I had to ask for help. The gifts that this higher power has given me are just so many. I don't even have time to tell you. But I was able to go back to school, change careers, get a degree, become a computer technician, and then we moved to Michigan. And I was feeling like I need to do something. I need to do some kind of service work. And I didn't know what to do. Well, some lady by the name of Riley, who was a chairperson for the International Advisory, makes this phone call and says, "Are you really interested in doing service work?" I said, "Yeah." She says, "We need a secretary, and we really need one very desperately." Unfortunate thing had happened. Tom, who was a secretary, had passed away. And they sent all these big boxes full of mail. I had to sit there and really get into service, answering all these letters, doing all the work, and loving it. Loving it because I was hearing from all of you. I was getting letters from all over the world, and it was beautiful. You know, I wish I had enough time. I really do. I wish I had enough time to tell you all the things that my higher power has done for me. I don't have enough time. But if I can just leave one thing with you today, is if you're not in service, get into service. That's where it's at. That is where it's at. You know, my higher power loves me so much. He brought me here. He brought me here to do whatever, I don't know, whatever he's got me doing. You know, but today I don't even mind making a fool of myself. I even am learning how to play golf. My sponsee and I were out there in the middle of the golf course, and here I am on my knees doing a third step. You know, it's like, I have no idea. But you know, today I can be a fool because my higher power, my God is love. God is love. I am love. You are love. Thank you.
Thank you, Hilda, for that powerful message.